Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hey, everybody. This is the Late Night Podcast, and I'm so excited. I am talking to my friend, Henry Winkler. You enunciate so well, I don't need it.
Okay, I will here, be so clear.
I'm here with Henry Winkler, everybody.
A very
one
clear
of our
speaker.
Favorite. You are a very clear speaker.
Yes.
That's what makes you so perfect playing an acting teacher.
Oh, my goodness. So, like one of the promotions, I was invited to South by Southwest.
Yes.
And to hold an acting class.
Yes, this is a festival in Austin, Texas, and to promote Barry, you taught an acting class.
I did. First, on the first day, we did at the Twitter House, that was what it was called, I had no idea what that meant, with Darcy Carden.
One of your co-stars.
One of the co-stars, but one of the premier improvisors.
Yes.
We held an improv class that Darcy ran. And then the next day, I held an acting class. 600 people showed up.
600 people show up.
Unbelievable.
So what? How do you even manage that?
Well, you know what I did? I said, put on your website, come if you want, with anything, a poem, a song, a scene with a partner, a monologue, 90 seconds. It has to be 90 seconds.
Oh, that's
seconds,
smart.
So I can get as many people as I can possibly get. I picked 7. One young lady looked like 19, a long denim skirt with a scarf in her hair, a leopard pattern. She started doing a monologue she wrote in an accent. I went to shake her hand, and she gave me like the peace sign, you know, the prayer
yeah,
sign.
Yeah, sure.
So I figured, okay, religious Jew, because I couldn't touch her.
Oh, wow.
She did a great monologue. Turns out she's 39, has 3 children, has suppressed being an actress all these years, and now is able to take a class once a week for an hour, and she flew in from Israel.
Oh, my goodness.
How about that?
That's amazing.
So if you're listening all over the world, I hold classes. but I'm going to start.
Yeah. Are you going to?
No.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, it was exhilarating.
I imagine.
It really
I want to use that as a segue about her coming all the way from Israel, because I wanted to ask about your origins as an actor. Your parents, is this accurate?
Came all the way from Germany.
Germany, because right. of what was going down in
right.
Germany at the time.
Yes.
This was a fleeing of Germany.
This was a fleeing of Germany. And they came here. My father had a 6-week visa. And I have the correspondence of him writing to the American government saying, could I just have a little more time? Them writing back saying, yes, you can, and eventually never left. And I, thank God, was born here in Great America.
Great America. And you grew up in the Upper West Side?
I did, on 78th and Broadway.
And is it true you've just arrived in the city and your first stop is always at the same restaurant?
It's called the Burger Joint. Mm-hmm. It is in the lobby of the Meridian Hotel
yep.
on 57th Street, between 6th and 7th.
Yeah.
And that burger never disappoints us. My wife and I love it beyond.
And I'm a little loath to bring it up because it is one of the best kept secrets in New York City.
Yes.
This is, you can't believe in this lobby that there is this.
Behind red velour.
Yeah. Is this what feels like a downtown burger place.
Like a shack.
Yeah, it is a burger shack.
I mean, it is a tiny, tiny place. And my wife just, it's called the Parker Meridian Hotel.
It is called the Parker Meridian Hotel.
Thank you, Stacey.
It was very.
She's sitting behind me.
I wonder if people, go back and listen and see if you can hear Stacey writing it into the microphone.
Oh, right.
Because she came over and she really.
She did. She did. She scribbled Parker Meridian. Now, this is the woman who said, I will not interrupt.
And well, technically she hasn't.
She kept her word.
Yeah, she has kept her word.
Thank you, Stacey.
You used to come to this building to be in the peanut gallery for the Howdy Doody show.
I came.
Just once. Okay.
Once. And my mother brought me this kind of plump, short German. And we were going home in a cab back to 78th Street. I had my jar of Ovaltine, mm-hmm. right? That kind of chocolate milk mix
yep.
drink. And a Three Musketeer that I wanted so badly. But because it was before dinner, I was denied
mm-hmm.
my bar.
You know,
big enough to share with a friend.
We had one of your Arrested Development co-stars, Jessica Walter, was recently here, and she said
adorable.
She was in the peanut gallery for Howdy Doody multiple times.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a lovely woman.
Yes.
We have great scenes together.
You really, over the years, have had some fantastic scenes. So were your
parents... See, now there, how lucky am I as an actor? I was hired really for two.
Yeah.
You know, as a fringe character, and I stayed for 5 years.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Were your parents, as immigrants
opposed?
From Germany, were
opposed
they?
To being an actor?
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
They were. Okay.
God, how'd you know that,
well,
Seth?
It just didn't strike me that they would.
No, they wanted me to take over the family business.
What was the family business?
The family business was buying and selling wood.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
My father brought a business over here from Germany and wanted me, as the son, to take over. I said I wanted to be an actor. And I tell this story. I've told it before. He said to me several times a week, why do you think I bought a business over here? I said, besides being chased by the Nazis, Dad, was there like a bigger reason than that? And the way it's going, I mean, I don't want to get heavy, but I am starting to feel the breath of the brown shirts on my neck.
You are.
Right now in this world.
It's a very scary
Brazil,
time.
Brazil, Poland, America, not all of America, just a certain city that starts with a D and a C.
Yes. I can only imagine what it's like. I mean, I have it not on my side of the family to some... Not too much.
Your
of it
parents either. Are lovely.
My parents are.
I watch those shows.
Aren't they great?
They are adorable.
I have very different parents than yours, in that mine were very excited that I was trying to be an actor.
How is it being a parent yourself?
I mean, it's the most wonderful thing.
It is.
It's cliche to say that it's.
No, it is not.
But I can tell you this, no parent can tell a person what being a parent is like and not overplay it.
Right. So I, being the pedantic guy I am, tried at one time to explain what it would feel like. And then I realized there are no words.
Yeah.
You cannot put it into language we know what it is to be a parent.
Yeah. You realize the things in your professional life or even in your personal life before you have kids that require so much to go right to make you feel a certain way just happens if you watch your kid eat oatmeal.
Unbelievable.
You know, where you, you know, for example, you obviously had this very exciting year where you've won awards for.
Yes. Well, Barry, two out of the four.
Two out of the four, but still pretty good. And that's
not bad.
Not bad. No. Pretty good haul.
Yeah.
But there, you know, those things, those moments and where you have some professional moment like that where I can only imagine what you feel. But then I imagine at the same time, you could probably track back a million moments like that with your
With your children. Oh, it is absolutely true. I was taking home movies. You know, I take every child has tons of home movies. I never was without a camera.
Yeah.
Max, our youngest, who is a movie maker, he's a director. He saw Bottle Rocket, yeah. Wes Anderson's Bottle Rocket, and told us at 10, I'm going to be a director. Kept his word.
Yeah.
So I'm shooting him. He's 3. It's at his birthday party. He's dressed like a pirate. He said, Dad, would you hold my sword? And I said through the camera, I love you, Max. And he looked up and through the camera said, I love you too, Dad. Now, can I have ice cream? I don't know what it was. It was a moment when I literally saw the giganticness of this person's soul.
Yeah.
Just in the way he said, I love you too, Dad. I will take that forever.
Yeah. It has so increased my capacity to feel goosebumps.
Yes.
And that is wonderful. There's never a time when you don't welcome that feeling.
Yeah, it's true.
It just happens all
Now, how
time.
About this? How about you have 2 children?
Yeah.
Same people, same parents.
Yep.
Are they so diametrically opposed?
Yeah, I mean, the 1-year-old, I feel like we keep waiting for him to turn into the 3-year-old.
Right.
And now it's official of, oh, he's his own guy.
He's his own guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun to watch as well, certainly. You wrote your 28th in a series of children's books.
Yes.
And your final.
Right. We have written 34.
Okay.
But 28 are Hank Zipser. They are it is the story of my life as a dyslexic.
Yeah.
And he's a funny kid. He's resourceful. He just happens not to figure anything out. So this one is called Everybody is Somebody. And on the cover, he's in the library of PS 87, where I went to school on 78th Street, you know, between Amsterdam and Central Park. And I want to tell you that it was an amazement because I met Timothée Chalamet.
Really?
At the SAG Awards. So here's this handsome, tall kid, and he's wearing a shirt and a pair of pants. And I said, I just have to say to you, you are so talented. I'd like to give you a hug. And he said, I'm a hugger. And then he said, you know, we've met before. And I said, when? When he was 8, I read my books, Hank Zipser, to PS 87, to the kids in an assembly. He was 8 years old in the audience.
That is incredible.
Is that unbelievable?
This, I only say this because he was a friend of yours, but Gary Marshall,
Gary.
My freshman year at Northwestern.
My guru.
Your guru, Gary Marshall, one of my favorite people in the world. And I had a meeting with him once, and I said to him, you know, when I was a freshman at Northwestern, you came and you had just written a book, and you spoke to, we were the incoming freshman class, and you gave all of us, he gave each one of us a signed copy.
Yes.
You know, he just ahead of time
signed. When you
signed.
Own that many TV shows.
Yeah.
You can give an entire class.
Well, that is the act of a rich person,
yes.
Giving the books. The act of a kind person is signing all 300.
That's
Gary.
Oh my God, that was
great. He was a combination of both.
I learned what it was to live on a set, to be a professional on a set, to be an executive producer from him.
Yeah.
From him.
And I will say one of the great things that I think no one would believe is that the Fonz was Jewish and Gary Marshall was Italian.
So many people have come up to me and said, when I heard that the Fonz was Jewish, it made me love Hebrew school. Now, you know, in Hebrew school, I was a cut up because I just couldn't get anything. I learned when I read from the Torah on my 13th birthday on my bar mitzvah, I learned it in phonetics. I could not read another language. I couldn't read English either, but Hebrew was out of the question.
Yeah.
A lot of dots, a lot of curlicues.
Right.
What the hell were they thinking? But anyway.
I want to ask about your career post-Fonzie because obviously
yes.
That was, to this day, as iconic a role that's been in television, very few TV characters have their own statues. You have one in Milwaukee.
I do.
You do?
People send me them with the statue, dress the statue up, dance with the statue. They send me pictures from all over the world.
And when that ended, though, obviously you knew you were up against a challenge that people have when they play iconic roles like that of what you were going to do next. Did you think about that a lot, or did you just leap into the next act?
I did not leap. I fell. I tripped. I had a part of my compensation was on-the-air commitments with ABC.
Gotcha.
If I came up with a show, they would put it on. we came up with MacGyver.
Right.
That was the first. I did not have a plan B. I had just lived my dream.
Mm-hmm.
10 years on the show, the character, I got 55,000 letters a week. Had a great time. I now did not have a clue on what to do next. And it was psychically painful. I literally sat at my desk in that office at Paramount, put my feet up, and I was smart enough, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything, because it eventually will percolate up. It was horrible. It was painful.
I think that maybe one of the scariest places in show business is an office in L.A. after a hit.
Yes, right.
I mean, that just must be the...
Well, what do you think? You think, oh my God, am I going to do anything that will equal what I've just done? Can I come up with anything that will equal? You don't know what to do. You are, it's almost as if you become an automaton. You are like locked in the space. And acting was very difficult to find because everybody said, so funny, such a lovely guy. But, you know, he was the Fonz.
Right.
Boom.
Yeah.
And for 8 years, I could not really find an acting job.
And do you feel as though you aged into another act of your career? In that it you needed a bit of a break from the Fonz?
I did not know that that was true,
right?
But that is probably true.
Yeah,
that probably that period forced me to broaden my horizon because I thought I'm dyslexic. I don't really know business. I can't be a producer.
Yeah,
until I started producing and then realized, oh, I could do this casting and I could get through a script and figure out a problem and I can get the crew and, you know, give them incentive. But the business part, I had no idea about.
You obviously had a lot of acting teachers over the course of your career.
14.
Mm-hmm. And Gene Cousineau is...
a conglomeration.
Oh, is there a little piece of all 14, would you say?
Yes. Well, the best parts are Bobby Lewis, who was a member of the group theater in the 30s.
Okay.
The worst, my junior year at Emerson, I had a teacher who was pretty weird and not as effective as I needed him to be. But, of course, I wasn't a great student either. I came in, I said, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to read the script and act at the same time. And he said, you didn't memorize it. I said, well, no, because I'm really working on this technique. He said, not in my class. And I was thrown out of my major.
Really?
Yeah. It took me weeks to talk my way back in.
How, when you saw the script for the first time with Bill and Alec Berg, did you get to bring a lot to the building of the backstory, the character, I should say, of Gene Cousineau?
I didn't know that I could, because they are, Bill and Alec are so incredible. They're so precise. They are so knowing about what their details are, what they want. I didn't know that in that structure I could be so free.
Right.
I would tell them a story about an acting class that I had, and pretty soon, in the first year, there was that scene of us walking up and down the aisle with our shopping cart, tell me what's on the shelf.
Uh-huh.
You know, hey, get your hands out of your pocket. So some of it was improv, and some of it came from that story, and then they took over and wrote the rest.
You get to play an acting coach, and obviously the set is a theater.
Yes.
And probably feels familiar not just to you, but the other actors in the scene.
Yes.
Does that give it a nice freedom to feel a little looser with it?
You know, it does. And also, I have writer and Andy and Daryl, Bill, Darcy, Kirby, Sarah, and these people, every one of them is a home run hitter. You know what Bill did? When we first met, we read the script at the pilot around a table. He then took the shoot 'em up parts, you know, the actors in the killing part, and he said, Henry, teach a class. And I literally held class with my class of these incredibly talented people.
That's really fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
And I'm hoping it was as fun as it looked to win your Emmy. Was it exactly as much fun? It was certainly fun to watch.
You know what? It was, what a moment. Now, I never thought, oh, it's about time. I thought, I just won.
Right, that's good.
And this is the truth. I'm walking up the stairs. I kiss Stacy. I then hug Bill and Alec. I'm walking up the stairs, and there are the two stars of The Crown.
Yeah.
And I started to talk to them about their second season. On it, I lost my mind. I said, oh my, you know what? And then I realized I have to make a speech. I turn around, I have 37 seconds left. I turn around and the audience is standing and they are cheering. And if you never have a moment in your life outside of the family, that was a moment that I will cherish.
That's really lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, you mentioned The Crown.
Yeah.
I have heard, you're obviously a fan of that show.
I am.
You have actually taken a really lovely and yet entirely believable step for Henry Winkler. You have written fan letters to people.
I have.
Yeah.
Last night we saw Jeff Daniel.
Great.
And I wrote him a long time ago for The Newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Patricia Arquette.
Fantastic. What did she get it for? What did she get it for?
She got it for Escape from Dinnemore.
Oh, so good.
Oh, my God. She was amazing.
Amazing.
Then now I'm watching The Escape from Dinnemore. I'm watching Patricia Arquette and Benicio del Toro. And he is saying to her, don't tell anyone. Ah. And he breathes in her face for like 10 seconds. I go, oh, my God. Now we're at the Golden Globes, and I see Ben Stiller. I said, Ben, you did a great job, but what about those 10 seconds of Benicio just breathing like a dragon? He said, I know. I said to Benicio, okay, we've got that. You want to try something else? Benicio said, I'm pretty married to it. Ben said, okay, we're moving on. Let's move the camera over here, please. Now I fly to France.
Uh-huh.
I get a train from Paris to Angoulême, okay. A small town. Wes Anderson is shooting his film there. I'm in it with Bob Balaban, Tilda Swinton, Benicio del Toro, and Adrian Brody. I ask Benicio, I said, I get to ask you about this moment. He said, yeah, fun.
That's a perfect outcome.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about closing a circle.
It's really great. I'm pretty sure everyone you just mentioned there has been in a Wes Anderson movie before, but this was your first one.
My first time.
That is great.
So you learn to speak the language of Wes.
Yeah.
Because he is in control of every moment, and there are no stand-ins. So you're in the cold. The prop man really feels for you and gives you hot water bottles to put under your shoes.
Wow.
You stand for hours while Wes finally figures out the shot that he sees in his head. Nobody complains. Lois Smith, 88 years old, standing right next to you. Benicio doesn't even have socks on. And let me tell you, I hate being cold.
Yeah, I do too.
Oh, my God.
Misery.
And then you do 41 takes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now that must be, I would imagine, the real joy of putting yourself through that is knowing that what you will see, the finished product, will be
and
a Wes Anderson movie.
To be in his presence.
Yeah.
He is an adorable dessert.
Yeah.
He wears the same suit, kind of like this tweed herringbone, dark brown and beige, a yellow scarf. He knows every extra's name. He is delightful. He takes over the town. The extras are the people that he saw on the street. At night, you go back to the same room. Everybody gets out of their costume into their street clothes. Boys and girls, there are no trailers. You get your makeup off. And then his chef makes dinner for everybody.
I mean,
oh my God.
What a jackpot.
Oh my God.
I'm so happy to hear that it's
okay,
that much fun.
Do you think
fun.
He's going to ask me again?
I will. Let me see the finished product.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And you'll write him a letter?
Yeah, I'll write him a letter.
Okay. Can I just say I've really enjoyed this conversation?
It's always great talking to you.
Thanks.
It has been one of the real genuinely, one of the best things about having a show like this is when you get to meet people you've loved your whole life and you get to find out that they are nice people.
Thank you.
Thank you, Henry.
Thank you. And I get to see Amber and Jenny.
Your two favorite.
Oh, my God.
I'm very happy to be your third favorite person on this show.
It's true.
Thanks, Henry.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.